Welcome to episode 3 of Hope is the Thing. This is your host, Dawn Wing. In this episode, I talk with members of Suffolk Community College's Asian Culture Club, now known as the Asian American Culture Club. I speak with Brendan, Huddy, and May, who are very active leaders of this student group. And in our conversation, we learn about how they've dealt with growing up Asian American in Suffolk County, their leadership work in trying to promote cultural awareness and understanding at the college, and just other thoughts in terms of being bicultural, their family's experiences, coming to the U.S., just really overall a very interesting conversation we had. Even the tables turn. I get interviewed and ask some questions about my own experiences. So do stick around, and I'll see you when we get back. And just one last note, Brendan, by the way, was the Asian American Culture Club president from 2014 to 2016, and May will be the incoming president this next fall, 2016. So congratulations to you both on a job well done.
So my name is Brendan, as you know.
And how do you pronounce your last name?
Nguyen.
Okay.
Majority of the people say my last name as Nagayan or Ngayan.
Okay.
Which is, you know,
right?
Is a whitewashed version.
Before.
And Nguyen is a most common whitewashed, version of our last name.
Okay.
But everyone pronounces as Wing after we correct that.
Uh-huh.
So that's a majority of people say that.
Okay.
I was born here in America on not Long Island, but Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And Portland, Oregon is a very dense Asian population. Mm-hmm. So back then, I was very comfortable with the environment. You know, our culture was here and there, the Vietnamese culture. But at age around 5 or 4, I moved to Long Island, specifically Lake Ronkonkoma, and that's when I started noticing, like, I was, like, segregated into, like, just an individual Asian compared to, like, a cultured mindset of Asian Americans. I first saw this at private school when I was, like, 4 or 5 years old, so pre-K. The first time I experienced some kind of segregation was when it was nap time. I was woken up by kids showing me a book, right? Inside the book had a kid, obviously a Chinese kid since it's majority of the population. And I was bullied, and they shoved the book into my face and said, "Hey, this is you," pointing at the Asian kid in the book. And I was like, okay, I guess that's normal. But majority of the kids were from a white descent or an Hispanic descent. And I didn't think of anything back then. But as years progressed, I went, oh, okay, that was an instance of a segregated assault, you can say, or separated from one. After that, years and years go on, I experienced more and more experiences like that. And I thought that was normal until, high school, when I started saying, oh, wait a minute, this isn't normal. And a lot of people don't really experience it. And I have more to say, but, I'll give time for others.
Okay. Hi. My name is Hadi Ali. That's how you pronounce it, American-wise. It's Hadi Ali, if you say it like Middle Eastern way. Okay. Both of my parents are born in Pakistan, so they're both, like, immigrants. So I'm, like, a first-generation, like, son who's, like, born here. And I was born, actually, in Stony Brook Hospital.
Oh, okay.
So it's, like, I'm, like, at or near town, even though I live in, like, Lake Room. And, let's say, for me growing up, it was actually, like, I was raised in Pakistan, basically. Okay, I'll tell you my story.
Yeah.
Okay, I was born 1997. Born here. Yeah. And 3 years later, I went to Pakistan. Then I was raised basically in Pakistan for like 7 years. Then I came here when I was 10. So I was in fifth grade when I came here. People at Forest like bullied me because like in gym, like I would just like randomly play with stuff because I was like a little bit quiet and was reserved. Like I didn't want to talk to anyone because I didn't know like the language too much, because I spoke Urdu, which is like a language in Pakistan. It's different from like India, where you just speak Indian. It's just Urdu. It's not different at all. It's the same language, but like we write differently. And someone who bullied me, like they were just like picking on me, like leave me alone in a corner or something. We were in the same neighborhood. Like I would see him on the bus, so like it was like. Sometimes my mom would pack like some Pakistani food like for lunch, and I would be like, can you not do that again? Cause, like in the bus, like it smelled. Maybe it was like who farted, and I was like, wow. And but like the bully, like who was bullying me, like lived like really near. But in high school, ninth grade, I was really surprised where he like actually confronted me. That, and I was like, why did you do that to me? Like all those years, like in elementary school and like a little bit of middle school. And he said that I just like acted weirdly, so he was just like treating me weirdly. That's why. So I actually accepted that apology like that.
So he said he was sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because like I had class with him in gym. And I was like, okay, I was of course like avoiding him. Because even though it's like after so many years, it's still high school. And it's the same people around you every time. So I'm trying to make friends, of course. I moved though to like I moved high school, so like it was more difficult because I was like I'm into a new high school where everybody's already friends. How are they gonna be friends with me when I'm already like a transfer kid? But like of course like Middle East people are like accepted. It's not like they don't have friends, but I'm just like a reserved kind of person. So. That was.
I feel as if even if you're, doesn't matter if you're Asian American or brown, I feel like minority people or people in the minority group tend to get either segregated, bullied, whether, regardless of race.
You know what he said one time? It was like a 2009 era, like where. Barack Obama like was getting Osama bin Laden, right? He said like, oh, did you hear about your uncle?
Oh boy, yeah.
And I was like, I didn't report it to the principal because I was like, I don't know if that's an insult because I don't even know the person.
Yeah. Well, when you see bullying, you always expect it like what it's portrayed in the movies, like physical, pushed in a locker, but it's actually just more of a kindly joking verbal abuse. But at the moment, it could be funny, and you can actually think it's funny, but moments later, you can actually see the real damage, and that's where I believe.
You know how you always have to, like, laugh it out?
Yeah, you have to pretend to laugh. But it's not really, like, well, sometimes you laugh at it, because, sometimes it is clever, but most of the times, it's more of a attacking, it's subtle bullying, it's subtle racism, you can say. Have you experienced that, Tom, as being raised in Queens?
I think I remember in sixth grade, I don't remember the project, but it was about different cultures, like doing a report on different cultures, and somehow it came up, there was a kid in this class, and he was, his name was Peter, and he was of Italian descent, but he was actually not a bully. I think he just kind of was repeating what he heard from his parents, and he just noted, oh, this neighborhood's changing, there's those people, and they have their businesses, and why isn't it English, why is it, there's becoming more Chinese and Korean, and it hurt my friend. It made me uncomfortable because it was the first time I realized that some of my classmates actually perceived us as, like, outsiders, or, like, was hearing stuff where, like, they felt threatened simply because we were different, of a different culture. But no, I was fortunate in that I didn't get that growing up. But it was really only out here, I think, kind of noting what you're saying, because it's so segregated and there is more of this culture of like putting people in their places.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very used to being comfortable, like being outside, walking around by myself. And
right.
Here, I think that it's very loaded. I think people kind of think you're poor, or people who tend to take public transit, let's say, which I used to do, are people of color. You know, so there's a lot of associations that I think people feel like freely to pick on those people who are, they think are lesser than, and like to put them in their place. So I lived in Patchogue briefly, and I was walking down the street on a Friday night. I was meeting with a friend, and I actually biked, because that's what I'm used to. And so I was by myself, and a gang of these white guys, they were probably, I don't know, whatever, they just were like, hey, ching chong, ching chong. And I was like, I've never had that. This is like,
really?
I'm an adult, and I was just shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is this like America, like 2014, and in New York, and people think like the South is like, no, it's just as prevalent elsewhere, like we just don't talk about it, or it's subtle, as you say, like people
mm-hmm.
who are minorities get more of the brunt,
right?
And it's not within plain view.
Mm-hmm.
It's very isolated and isolating. So that's kind of what propelled me to want to talk to more Asians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked to some faculty members, like they're, you know, because they're not from here, and they came here for school, so what was that like?
Right.
But I just, I'm trying to, you know, I think it's good to get perspectives from young adults, like
mm-hmm.
people who've been here for many, many years. It's
mm-hmm.
like, how do you cope? Like,
right.
just for even that kind of even help me, like,
mm-hmm.
each other, like, as a community. So, and I guess my next question would be, well, maybe let's get your story. And I do have a follow-up question on what you said in terms of segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get back to it. I guess, have people from other ethnic groups or marginalized groups, like, have there been experiences where you've interacted with them and tried to kind of have some clarity? I don't know, like, kind of that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get to me. What's your story?
Okay, so hi, my name is May. I was born in Smithtown, and then I lived in East Islip for 6 years. I remember that the community I lived in was mostly black, so more African-American. So every time I would go to my bus stop, the kids at the bus stop would be like, oh, look at that Chinese girl, look at her, and then look where why is she here, or something like that. I don't remember. It was like, I was like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So, and then I think I moved into Mastic.
Yeah.
And it was mostly white.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really experience anything over there. So, and then now I live in Sherlyn. Now I see mostly Vietnamese people over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, but I don't really talk to them, but my mom doesn't. Oh, that reminds me. I'm not 100% Vietnamese. I'm half Vietnamese and half Cambodian.
Mm-hmm.
My father is from Vietnam. And my mom's from Cambodia. So, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Have you ever experienced any bullying or any segregation? Or?
Yeah, in middle school, I believe there's this kid. He called me like, hey you, and then I turned around and I'm like, what? And you know the stereotype where like the pinky is like the middle finger for like the Chinese people or something like that?
What's the stereotype?
The pinky finger is the middle finger for us.
I've
never heard that.
I know.
Really?
So,
yeah.
Oh, did you know, like, I never knew the middle finger meant like F you, because like in Pakistan there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
Like if
yeah.
you do that, it's like, what are you doing? You're
mm-hmm. Yeah, growing up, every here on Long Island or Suffolk County, I experienced not anywhere else, but here in particular, ever since preschool, elementary school, middle school, high school, the pinky supposedly means the F word in China. I don't know where they get this from. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I don't know. Never researched into it. But, like, it's like, oh, ha. I mean, it could be, it could not be. That's how, that's how, like, emphasized it is. Right. Like, I don't even know if that's true or not.
I mean, it's just, like, the story. I mean, this came up in my discussion with Sarah and Tess, who were adopted, and they were, like, because they grew up in white families, and they're, you know, they're quite unaware, and so it wasn't until they were in school. It's, like, the school where you learn about, like, this is where people, you put you in your place, and they were told, oh, I'm going to stay away from you when they're driving, and they're like, why? What? Like, where does that come from? Like, why is that? So they just, it was, like, this being imposed on these expectations, and then that really takes a toll on your psyche, because some people start to believe it. And I guess, how did you address it? Like, did you tell teachers, your family?
I was at the bus stop. Like, I couldn't do anything about it.
And you were fine, right?
No, I was, once he did that to me, I just gave him the middle finger back. Because I'm like, I'm usually quite a soft-spoken person, but, like, once I deal with racism or, like, someone who makes fun of me because, you know, my discipline, I just go off on them. Like, I don't care. I just lost, like, all my respect for you. So,
And how is that, how are their responses? Do they apologize or do
they... No, they're like,
So they're good. So they get it.
Yeah.
I think that was my experience too. I was just telling, did you catch where I was in Patchogue? There was a store. There was a time I was walking down the street with these guys. They're like, oh, Ching Chong, Ching Chong, and I was just like, excuse me, because I was really that irate. Like, I could have said an expletive, but I think, and that one guy turned around and was just like, sorry. And I think it's that whole, like, they don't expect us to just say anything.
Right.
Like, they may they may think that we don't know the language, and they think they can bully us around. And B, I think it's more. I think that's the big part, that they don't, they pick on us because they don't think that we can stand up for us.
Right.
But anyway, but other than that response, I mean, did you ever feel like your parents would understand? Were they themselves also experiencing
that?
And how is it different, like, because of language? I mean, was there a difference because of language for them? Or?
I don't know. My mom, she gets mistaken for a Hispanic person.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Because a lot of Hispanic people speak Spanish to her.
Okay.
So I don't know how. I don't know how. She deals with that.
Well, I used to get that ethnicity a lot. I think because in Latin America there are Asians too. They might just point with, like, maybe she knows.
I don't know.
Should we compete? Why not? But that's interesting. And I guess that also ties in with, like, talking to other people of color.
Right.
So not just your parents who are also people of color.
Right.
But, like, so I guess talking about parents, teachers, and others that you may have went to try to get help.
Yeah,
or to get support or to kind
of... I have a very good family.
Okay.
So, like, our my father's side of family is all here, and he has, like, 7 brothers.
Oh, wow.
And, like, and 2 sisters.
Yeah.
So their families are here.
Yeah.
And, like, we, a lot of times when we were young, like, we would gather up, just, like, have an event, like, this Eid, where it's, like, after Ramadan, the month of fasting that's coming up. I'm gonna have to fast June. So I'm eating everything I can in the morning. I had to do my fast last year. The calendar changed. So the last year I had to do my fasting during graduation. So I couldn't eat or drink anything. You can't drink water, too. So,
really? Can't drink water when you fast?
Leon does, doesn't he?
Yeah, Leon.
Yeah, he drinks water.
Yeah.
Can't even drink water.
For a day straight?
For the morning.
For
the day.
Okay.
I've been down eating people.
Yeah.
That was literally me. But it's, like, probably fattening because, like, you have everything in your stomach and you're supposed to sleep.
Yeah.
So, like, but it's, sometimes you lose weight with that. But it's all for, like, a good cause, like, for God and your prayers. And, where were they? Oh, yeah, I have a good family.
Yeah.
So, like, we gather up a lot. Like, we have different events going on. It's either at the mosque or it's either at someone else's house. We're having a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we have a good connection, whereas in I never needed any help because I have a good family to like rely on. Like I didn't need too many friends. Like you, I'm kind of a person who just like needs one or two friends that are like really good.
Yeah.
Like everybody else.
Yeah.
And I like my family a lot. Yeah. Like cousins wise, and I have a lot of guy cousins and a lot of girl cousins. And some little nephews.
Okay.
Right now, so it's really good.
So did you, when you were getting picked on at school, were they sympathetic, or did they not, did you not tell them?
I don't tell them.
Oh.
Okay. It was like just a time break. I just said it's just right now, I don't care, because like I will eventually be a better person than them.
Okay. So it was just, it was for you, just having a family that was there gave you more of like
support.
Yeah, okay, so you just, the bully, so that kind of outweighed the bullying effects in some ways. Okay.
The way how I cope with more of a verbal attack, bullying, etc., is normally I would, you know, have support with my family and whatnot, but eventually, even though I gave them my support, which was very helpful, that didn't stop the bullying or this, you know, the individual attack due to either my culture or looks or differences. The main thing that motivated me and pushed away the bullying was using that as encouragement and furthering either education or, you know, it helped me grow as a person instead of taking that and turning it into hatred and, you know, by verbal attacks or whatnot. So instead of immediately like responding to their bullying, I would use that as motivation to improve myself and whatnot. And I'm happy of how I turned out. It could be due to the bullying, could not be through bullying, but I feel like, yeah, it was hurtful, but you can also build upon, you know, improve as a person from those attacks.
And I guess going, so you were president for 2 years, Asian Culture Club, which is very demonstrative of what you just mentioned in terms of taking something negative into something positive to hopefully improve understanding here. And do you... how is that experience, and do you think it's getting better on the island in terms of diversity or understanding or respecting cultures?
Through my experience of as a president for Asian Culture Club, our main mission goal was to spread the Asian culture through either our lifestyle, culture, and our cuisine, which is our, you know, mission statement. Through that, it exposed me to so many opportunities to experience from Korean to Thai to Philippine, all these cultures, and to learn. I met a lot of people with different cultures that I never met before, and through those experiences, I can see that I wasn't alone when it went from bullying or how their parents treat them and the goals and expectations of many others. But as I meet them, I have more and more in common, which also strengthened me because I know that I'm not the only one getting, you know, picked on or experiencing the same things as other people, which is, you know, it was pretty a relief to understand that other people were experiencing the same thing that I was experiencing, essentially. And that definitely opened my mind so much more. So much more.
And I guess for you both as well, like, kind of, how has being... active in Asian Culture Club, how has that helped you, or how do you think you have helped other people in terms of like learning about other cultures or being more understanding as a human being?
I just, to be honest, I just go there just for myself.
Okay, that's fine. Just to feel...
No, just to pass time.
Well, okay. Okay. So it's, but it's like a safe, like a place you feel like you can just hang out and not be bothered or be entertained.
Yeah, we like help a lot with like, we do a lot of stuff. We do a lot of events, different events. And it's fun because like I like the Asian culture. Like I like to see like how more it is, because I don't know about like Asian culture itself, like what do you guys do, like, go ahead, because I'm interested in kind of that stuff, because like I like to watch some like historical dramas, like a lot of Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Like, I watch a lot of that because I'm very interested in that. I don't know why, but I'm interested.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. But Pakistan, is there Bollywood is in from India.
They're getting really weird.
Bollywood, like,
Bollywood, okay, this is what they do with the movies. It used to be so good, like, where you learn so many lessons.
Yeah.
And about, like, where, like, there was this family that lived happily, but, like, they had some financial problems or something. And, like, that what they had to resort to, but, like, they learned from it or something. But nowadays, it's literally just a movie with full of songs.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point to the movie. Since there's so many songs.
Right.
If you see a Bollywood movie, you'll understand.
Yeah.
Like, after 5 minutes, there's another song. 5 minutes, there's another song. Because, like, I think movies right there, I haven't been to Pakistan in such a while. Because, like, I have a problem, but now I do have a passport.
Okay.
But I don't know when to go. It's probably going to be for a friend's wedding.
Okay.
Because that's what we mostly go to Pakistan for, a friend's wedding or somebody else's wedding, a family member's. But, like, if you see a Bollywood movie, you should see one.
Okay.
You should just see one because you'll just understand what I'm saying. It's like,
so or we could do that.
Yeah.
No, really, you could just play a Bollywood movie. Why not? I would do it.
Why not?
Or co-sponsor with Desi Club.
Oh, they're gone.
There's no more Desi Club.
Yeah, because they left to Storybook and Farmville. Because I know the president.
All the club members.
The president and the wife president.
Are gone.
They're not.
but this club still exists.
It exists, but no one wants to take initiative.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because probably shy.
Aww. I mean, anyway.
Or they just don't want to do the work. Because there's a lot of work with club.
It is.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I had another question. You're saying something about, I'll come back.
No rush.
But I guess, like, in this club, we gather a lot of people who would just want to have fun.
Yeah.
With the culture.
Yeah.
With its cuisine, lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I emphasize in everything, everyone in the club, I feel, should know our mission statement is to learn the Asian culture through the lifestyle. Cuisine and culture.
And culture.
Yeah.
Which is those three main, topics.
Yeah. I remember early on, Brandon, you were thinking about adding, like, an Asian American mm-hmm. perspective of that. And could you talk more about that, maybe, desire? What was your thought process?
Originally it's called Asian Culture Club.
Right.
Yes, you pertain to the Asian culture, but I feel like since I'm a first generation Asian American, it should be called Asian American Culture Club. Because the Asian culture versus Asian American is so different.
Yeah.
You know, the Asian culture is more orientated to how they're raised, through their culture, lifestyle, and food, whatever, our mission statement.
Yeah.
But the Asian American lifestyle is completely different. Since you're in America, how society reacts, how individual, reacts to how you are, or the environment of what you're raised in is completely different than the Asian culture versus Asian American.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I changed the name to Asian American Culture Club instead of Asian Culture Club.
Is it officially changed?
Yeah. It's now called Asian American Club.
Is it?
Yeah.
On paper? I didn't know that.
It's American Asian.
It's Asian American Culture Club now.
Seriously?
On paper?
Mm-hmm. Huh. That's interesting. Are they going to change
everything? I guess that would maybe, because that, your way you just said, that's a very good point in terms of including, it's like the heritage part is important too. But I think what you have to say,
everybody who joined was gonna be stereotyped to like being Asian, the only ones that are gonna come.
The mindset of others, like foreign Asians, versus like I'm born here.
Right. There's a completely different way of thinking. Yeah.
Well, okay, that's great. I didn't know that got changed officially.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So will that be added to the mission, or maybe we could discuss that? I think that's a good... did you ever have that conversation with the club, actually?
I had the conversation through the officers that I was working with. And I believe I did announce it to a club, but the majority of people inside the club are just there just to hang out or spend time with the community that we, you know, set up. So the news was there, but they didn't really mind it. But to certain individuals, I believe the news did impact them. Whether they want to show it or not. But it's there.
Well, that's great. I think that's very empowering to say, hey, it's okay to talk about these issues.
Right.
And this is a safe space to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, I mean, I know your impact will still be a part of the club,
mm-hmm.
even though you'll be away, but
right.
With that change, it's like, is there some hope or desire to add more dialogue, like we're having, to the club, or kind of like what format do you think would benefit students at something?
I believe trying to just show how diversity is important,
mm-hmm.
is to spread it through either diversity events, talks, conversation, whatever, to spread like the word of certain, you know, individuals to others, to show how diversity is something happening around us. Because,
right.
you know, there's always going to be a group of people, majority, minority, it doesn't matter, but whatever group you're in, there's always a certain standpoint, a certain mindset, no matter majority versus minority, you know. But it's important to spread it. That's what I believe we should do in the future, or constantly, to spread diversity.
Right.
So I'm just re-recording a question I had asked, since the original audio volume was not that great. At this part of the conversation, I asked the group how they dealt with biculturalism, whether they had any tensions with their family, what their family's expectations were in terms of how they were expected to act and behave, and whether those expectations clashed with being American and interacting with situations outside the home. So here's May.
My mom just taught me, just respect others, and that's it. That's all she told me. I'm like, okay.
So you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
So for me, in society, I was labeled as an Asian, as just straight Asian, not Asian American, not American, just strictly Asian. That was towards society. But at home, I was labeled as American or whitewashed compared to my family. So I wasn't either comfortable either in society or home, because one way or another, I was always a minority. So the outside society views was different from what I was used to, and that's what I was more centered in as an Asian American. But at home, I was more looked as the whitewashed kid or the Asian American kid at home. What I'm trying to say is, whether I was at home or outside for school or clubs or sports, I was labeled as a minority, whether it was family or outside. Because in my family, when I talk to them, it's mostly in English, but they talk in Vietnamese since they were born in Vietnam. In school, you know, I sound white. Most people who talk to me say, oh, you don't sound Asian, you're not, you know.
It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, do you know how to speak Chinese when I'm not even Chinese?
Right.
It's common.
Yeah.
So I experienced a lot of, you know, differences, whether it was family or society itself.
When your family would say you're whitewashed or American, is that to put you down? Or did they not even think of, like,
no,
they just kind of were like, oh, you're
They mean well.
Yeah.
It's mostly, oh, like, you've changed, they're not familiar with that, because the way how they raised in their country versus our country is way different. So they would say in stories like, oh, if you were back in Vietnam, you wouldn't act this certain way or talk this certain way. Or there's certain, you know, cultural, you know, what was it, teachings.
Yeah.
Whether it's verbal, beating is a common thing in many Asian countries.
Yeah.
I wasn't beaten personally, but they were like, oh, if you were back in this country, the way how you'd be disciplined would be A, B, C.
Yeah. And for, I guess, going back to May, like, so with you being on your own, how did that feel? So you never really were able to talk to your family about what you're going through?
No, not at all.
So you just, how did that feel for you? Were there times when it just, you needed to ask them for help or anything? Or?
No.
So you're, okay. But you have siblings, right? You have, yeah. But you're the eldest.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So do they ever ask you for?
No.
They never, so you, everyone's like, yeah. Oh, okay. And you have siblings too, right? Or you don't?
Yes, I have siblings. I have two brothers.
Older or younger?
Younger. I'm the oldest child.
That's also different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the middle child, so I think it's... I had an older sister to be like, okay, let's see her mistakes. And
mm-hmm. Yeah,
whereas you're in. You have to, you
I'm the youngest, so like, I'm the baby of the family. So, for me... It was like nothing, cause like since I'm the youngest, so like my parents knew like
bye,
like you're on your own,
yeah.
Whatever you want to do, cause yeah. Like they didn't care like what I grew up to be, so it gave me a lot of freedom to what I wanted to be or what could I do, and plus my parents are really like cool, meaning like they would be okay with whatever you wanted to be, like whoever you wanted to be, cause they were like. Very chill parents.
Okay.
I don't know how to describe chill, but...
Yeah. Like, so they are not, like, the quote-unquote typical, like, Asian
parents. Yeah, where...
Yeah.
But, like, they're typical in some way, where they're strict about, like... Probably strict about, like, curfews.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just to tell them, that's the only thing, like,
uh-huh.
that you're gonna be out for a little while or something.
Yeah.
But, like, it's different with my brother, because, like, he's the eldest.
Uh-huh.
So, like... He doesn't have a curfew, so he can come at 3 in the 3 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
He's hanging out. He's living there. He's my eldest sibling is 25. My second oldest sibling, she's 23. So, like, they have a 2-year gap, and I'm like a 7-year gap to my oldest brother,
uh-huh.
and a 5-year gap to my sister.
Okay.
I have only a sister and a brother.
Okay.
So, they treat me differently, yeah, of course.
Well, that's like the same as me and my siblings, but mine 3 years younger than my older sister, and my brother's 4 years younger, so he's 7.
So, like, you probably don't, like, talk to your youngest brother.
Yeah, not now, but I mean, as when we were growing up as kids, we were closer. It's a different relationship.
Even though, like, me and my brother, we're the same sex, but, like, we don't, like, talk too much because of our age gap. Because, like, he'll think that I'm, like, a child, and, like, I will probably think like a child.
He tells you what to do. Honey, don't do this.
Yeah, no, he's very quiet, because, like, he just wants to be left alone.
Oh.
Like, he's dissing himself from the family because, like, he's like, I just want to go with friends, go out with friends.
Yeah.
It's all, like, so a lot of our, like, Middle Eastern people have, like, Middle Eastern friends in the family.
Yeah.
So, like, we have a whole, like, group.
Yeah.
So, like, if we see each other, depends.
Yeah.
Depends who you see.
Yeah.
Depends if you see, like, someone from your mosque or from, like, a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Then you would get closer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like every Middle Eastern person knows the other Middle Eastern person. That's like the stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, oh, you know that person? Was sitting right there? is that your cousin? Like, that's just like... Because, like,
uh-huh.
I guess, like, Pakistani people are like... we have a lot of children.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of people, like, expect you to be, like, related. They don't know the other person. And, like, where... Kind of like a clothes on Indian, where like, are you Indian?
Yeah.
Are you Indian? What's Pakistan? Like, okay. I'm Indian with a quotation mark because, like, I guess.
These are
Asian
people?
Non
Asian
people.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, Caucasian people.
Right, gotcha.
Or
okay.
African American.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, they try to understand the world,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
They're just trying to.
Yeah.
Slowly get it.
Yeah. India and Pakistan have a very heated history.
Yeah, like, we were once a country together,
right.
But, like, we separated because of our religion.
Yeah, right. It was not a fun...
It was
yeah.
not. It's been a while, though. It's good.
Right. Yeah, but the wounds are still raw, I guess.
Yeah.
For some, more than others. Maybe for a Pakistan movie. Yeah.
But, like, yeah. I like how... But if you realize the situation in Pakistan right now, like, nobody knows about it, but, like, there's so much, like, poverty going on.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah. There's bombings within the country.
Right.
Like, other people.
Yeah.
They're just mad at each other.
Yeah.
For, like, the situation, because... I feel like it's mostly, like, where there's a lot of power outages. Like, there's power gone for, like, 6 hours. More than 6 hours. Like, 8 hours a day, like, in different intervals. Like, you have two hours gone of power. You have nothing, like, except for, like, the rich people who have generators. But the generators even, like, rust up or something, like, quickly because... We are literally near the equator, so the sun is, like, boiling hot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, 90 degrees is their normal weather.
Oh, my gosh.
So you would get heat flash. But everybody there is, like, normal to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I was there, it was normal to me, like, to just go out. But you would dress lightly. Like, I was literally thin as hell, too. Mm. I remember, like, I was like, I wish I could be that. Because it was like, I had no muscle on me. I was just thin. Like, a lot of people are thinner. Look, people who are fat are, like, probably rich.
Right.
Because they eat a lot.
Yeah.
They would eat a lot. So, like, the thinner people would be like, I was middle class, I would say. Like, upper middle class. Because, like, my grandfather owned a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we live next to the factory. We're in the factory. This is the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, our houses are right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're right next door.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, a little food factory, I think, or something.
Okay.
It was, like, really interesting to just watch. Because, like, there was, like, food being made. And I was like, what is going on? Because you just look down. Because it was all of my mom's family. It's my mom's family who owns the factory. My dad lived in another town in a kind of mansion. Well, it's just cement. Cement is literally like a good quality building.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were good in like living wise, thank God. Like to the people who have like the old fashioned toilets where it's like on the ground.
Yeah.
And not like a regular toilet.
Right.
A commode. Like it's like different and like the situations, and plus the roads are dirty because there's like dirt everywhere. It's like a desertish kind of thing, but it was like good because like you have food that you can eat. Because like I eat like halal food, which is basically like it's same food, same taste, same everything. It's just cut in a different way. That's it. And like right there, it's everything's halal. So like you go there to eat.
Yeah.
That's not what, like, our culture do. Like, we eat, like, somewhere, like here, like, I can't eat, like, a lot of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or else I have to find the halal sticker somewhere. Trying to eat that, because, like, I'm Muslim, you know. Like, it depends on religion.
Right.
Like, anybody could eat steak, pig, or, like, we can't eat pig, or steaks, or, jerky.
I think we'll find something for you.
It's just, I can eat, like, seafood dish.
Okay.
So it's fine.
Good.
So, like, sushi's my thing.
Okay. we'll see. But, I guess, like, why did your parents come over to America?
So, the reason why the majority of the Vietnamese population right now, all the first generation, are due to the Vietnam War.
Right.
So during the time of the war, majority of the parents, whether it was dad, mom, grandma, my relatives came to America because of the war. So there's a story. I don't know if my mom wants to tell it, but I'll tell it. So during the time of crisis of the Vietnam War, many Vietnamese people wanted to move on to somewhere safer other than Vietnam, which is similar to what we're experiencing right now when you see Syria, how all the immigrants are moving. Because in a couple decades from now, the first generation Asian Americans will be the same as the first generation whatever Syrians, you know. In Vietnam, like I said, they moved due to the war. So a story
the reason why my family in particular moved was because my grandma at the time was pregnant with my mom during the war. And my grandma and my grandpa wanted to move on to somewhere safer. And my aunt was living, not aunt, my grandma's sister was living in America at the time. So she sponsored the visa for just my grandma to come over here to give birth to my mom. Since she had a visa, she was able to fly to America and safely give birth to my mom, which I'm thankful for. But my grandpa, since he was a Vietnamese male, it was more harsher on visa laws. So the way how he can get to America was by illegal transportation. So in Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, majority of the people who wanted to go to America or somewhere safer had to go through lifeboats or rafts that were made, makeshift and whatnot. So my grandpa tried to go to America through a boat. And you hear many Vietnamese boat stories of how they tried to go somewhere safer, but eventually either, how ocean, storms, they capsize, no water, no food besides fishing. My grandpa, there's a story with my grandpa, which is personal, but it's okay to tell. So my grandpa and his brother and his other brother wanted to go to America for a better life and to be with my grandma. But unfortunately, there was a storm that flipped the boat over. And my grandpa, his brother, and his other brother were stranded in the middle of the ocean, right? And they were floating for, however long they were. And eventually there was a fisherman that came over, right? And the fisherman only took the female and the kids only. And during the time, my grandpa was 24 years old, which now would be considered a kid, but back then was considered adult. So they said, we're only taking women and, kids. So my brother, my grandpa's brother was a kid back then, so he was saved. Unfortunately, my grandpa wasn't saved, and he unfortunately, we're assuming he drowned. He could be out somewhere, but you never know. So unfortunately, my grandpa died from not being able to go on a ship or whatnot. And that changed, my mother's life, my grandma's life tremendously. But they're able to, have a great family now for me. Wow. So that's fortunate. Fortunate about that.
But,
So the Vietnam War, there's a lot, a lot of people are aware of Vietnam War and, the horrendous acts like napalm, Agent Orange. So a lot of kids here at Suffolk tend to use that as just a racism, joke that, I'll napalm you.
At Suffolk, they'll say
not Suffolk, but more generally as I was growing up, whether it was friends or random people. Yeah, it's very crazy here.
That's creative.
Yeah.
Creatively cruel.
A lot of people know about the Vietnam War because there was a game that was released, Black Ops, was generated. It was more orientated towards the Vietnam War, so they create a game out of that. So a lot of people are more knowledgeable about all these horrendous, weapons that was used in the Vietnam War. So after that, people started attacking me through all the game aspects, and I was like, whoa.
That's intense.
That was my stopping point. All the attacks beforehand were minor, but these were. That hit hard at home since my grandpa himself died due to the war. And all these things, the attacks that I experienced were painful. But beforehand it wasn't painful. This time it actually really hit close to home.
And then how did you react? Did you tell them
normally I would brush off the attacks, brush off the bullying and whatnot, or jokes. But this time I started actually taking a, you know, in the defensive stand, I would actually react, you know, sporadically saying, like, okay, enough is enough. I get it. You're trying to be funny or whatnot, whatever your personal missions are for, you know, attacking me. After that, after, like, verbally saying stop and whatnot, having a say, I found the attacks were less and less, which was good. You know, it taught me how to stand up for myself.
Yeah.
Instead of just using it for motivation, you know, you can stop it, you know, immediately versus, you know, over time.
Do you think that sometimes when people say these things, they don't realize the impact, like, or, I mean, I know you can tell whether the intent was to hurt you or sometimes if they think it's just a joke. Is it like one or the other?
It varies from individual to individual. Some people are there just to attack, you know, because they're violent and whatnot, whether it's their environment. But that's a different story to tell. Everyone's was raised, you know, in a certain way, so they act a certain way. That's give and take. That's, you know, humans in general. But most people were playing off as a joke, thinking, like, haha, that's funny or clever, but angry. Everyone's affected, whether it's either a compliment or a verbal abuse. It's all the same.
Yeah. Your parents came because for work?
I'm not sure about my father because I haven't talked to my brother. But for my mom, she came here not because of the Vietnam War. I think it was because it was a war between Cambodia and Vietnam, I believe. And she came here. She wanted to get away from that war, but
I don't even know. It's okay. You can always come back if you need. No worries. But And what do your parents do here? Like, what work?
My mom does nails.
Okay.
My mom, so in the Vietnamese culture, many women, they either make a laundromat. The stereotype is there, but for the Vietnamese culture, I guess it's true, but stereotypes are stereotypes. My mom opened a nail salon, and she does nails along with all my family relatives. They do nails. My dad's a private military plane inspector, and he got that through networking through one of my uncles.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's that.
Ready?
Okay. It's going to be a little bit long, but that's it. Okay. My mom and dad, they got married in Pakistan. They came here for their honeymoon, I think. And they liked America, so, like, they were like, okay. And it was like a domino effect because their cousins, like my dad's cousins, were moving here already. Like, because they were like, this is better to come here than to stay in a place where you can't raise your kids too much. But, like, I was raised in Pakistan because my mom and dad came here, then were like looking for jobs, and that was the initial reason to come here. Because it's jobs, because it's lifestyle, it's better for everyone. And my dad and my mom came here, they had kids, like me, my brother, and my sister. And then it was my mom and I was the three kids to go back because, like, there was some issues with jobs, and, like, we went back to stay there. And my dad would come back and forth to, like, check up because he was still working at a job here, and he was trying to get money enough to support us. So that's why it, like, took 7 years to come back. And I like that I was raised in Pakistan, but like some parts of it I don't like because like I didn't learn English too much, and like English was always like a problem to me because I couldn't speak well, and it was horrible in the beginning. But it's been like almost 10 years since I came here, so it was really good. And my dad right now, well, from the beginning, he worked at a Dial 7 company, which is like a limo company in the city.
Yeah.
And my mom, like when she came here, like after 7 years, she was like, she wasn't threading, so like she just started threading at the mall.
Wow.
And then right now she just works at home because like she, my mom has a lot of surgeries done, like not just this past year, for the past 5 years. Like she had her hernia done, her knee. She had some sort of lipo, but she couldn't get that lipo because her body is like hurting. Like her bones, her nerves. She knows that because she has done, like, she blames, like, us for it because that, but we're like, it's her own fault because she didn't treat herself right and, like, she was, like, blaming everyone. And, it's just going through tough times, but we're, like, supporting her to, like, get thinner. And it's like, it's a process.
Thank you.
And this ends episode 3. A huge thanks to Brendan, Hadi, and May for taking the time to share their thoughts, experiences, and encouragement for all of our listeners in terms of how they've dealt with their trials, tribulations, and struggles with discrimination as Asian American youth on Long Island. Best wishes to you all, especially Brendan, who has now moved on, graduated from Suffolk Community College, and now with the Navy, traveling the seas around the world. Best wishes again. Please do stick around for our next episode of Hope is the Thing. Until then, I wish you all well.